Ask the Podcast Coach Show for April 19th, 2014.
Let's get ready to podcast.
Oh, that music only means one thing. It's Saturday. You got little old me, Dave Jackson, your personal podcast coach. We're going to talk all things podcasting as he turns off his speakers behind him. And joining me right over there is Jim Cullison from TheAverageGuy.tv. Jim, how you doing, buddy?
It's good to be back, Dave. Thanks for having me.
We are doing something, you know, this show was started as a fun little ditty where we started playing with live stuff. And today is no different. There was a bit of a to-do, shall we say, on Twitter that the for many episodes we used callinstudio.com. And you can call that number, by the way, at 845-262-2401. So if you're like, hey, that's not the normal number, you're right. We're using that today because Colin Studios basically said, hey, why don't you give us another shot? Because we quit using them because people kept dropping. People would call in and then they would drop. Now, you know me, I like to just, hey, let's do stuff for the first time live on air. So you never know what you're going to get. So today I'm using my Magic Jack, which is that phone service, because I thought we used to dial into them via Skype. And I thought, well, I'm going to dial into them from the phone. So I'm using my actual iPhone, but I'm using the Magic Jack app, which allows me to make calls over Wi-Fi. And so we now have the phone caller on his own channel, if we want to get into the geeky speak of this. And I have not one, not two, but three different mixes going on now. One for the live stream, one that goes to Jim, and now one that goes to the phone. So if you would love to be our first test caller in this Frankenstein kind of setup, we would love
not to join and listen to the show, but to actually have a question.
Yes, actually have a question. And of course, if you are listening somewhere, you can find us at you have two places now. schoolofpodcasting.com/live is always there. And I added askthepodcastcoach.com/live, which I believe will take you over to schoolofpodcasting.com/live. If I remember right, I forget which one, and I'm hoping, I keep hoping that Nick Suberling will show up because I saw where he has renamed his show.
Oh, really? And I did too, actually. We can talk about that.
Oh, there you go.
Nick comes around. I just went through a whole kind of rebranding initiative with one of my shows, so we can talk about. And I think we make this, we could talk about it later, but I think we make this whole concept of getting iTunes to change harder than it is because it's not hard.
Oh, it's a piece of cake.
Yeah.
Good. What did you change your name to?
So we went from Home Tech, which was a terrible brand. It was too generic, and it no one could remember it. That's the odd thing that always struck me with it. Is even guys, I've talked about this, I think, before. Even guys, hosts that had been on the show multiple times, when I'd ask them what show they were on, they didn't know. They were like, I think it's the average guy, average tech guy, so whatever. So I'm joining a buddy of mine, Dave McCabe, over at homeservershow.com. I've been on that show for 4 years, and he's starting the Geeks Network. And so I changed it to Home Gadget Geeks, which rolls off your tongue really nice, Home Gadget Geeks. And we talk about everything in your home, thermostats, lights, PCs, phones, watches, anything you have in your home that's technology related, we talk about. And so it's just a great opportunity to switch the names. And there's a lot of places. You don't realize how many places you embed that name in things. And the logo, right? And so the upgrading or updating iTunes was easy. You just go into PowerPress, change the logo, change the verbiage on the, you know, I use category podcasting in PowerPress. So I go to that feed in that category, change all the information, and then hit the update button down on the bottom. Within 24 hours, it's updated on iTunes. Stitcher, not the same experience. So I think I'm actually have to contact them to have them re-pull my feed with the updated stuff because it hasn't updated in Stitcher yet. So, and that was like a week and a half ago. So those changes, you have to think about all these places, you know, and because I podcast everywhere, you know, we've talked Podomatic and Audioboo and Spreaker and Mixlr and all those places. You got to go in and change all that stuff. So it's a couple weeks worth of work, you know, depending on how you do it, just get it all changed, but worth the experience. So the rebranding, I think, is better. And everybody's, when I say Home Gadget Geeks, everyone goes, oh, well, that makes sense. And then, you know,
that's right, it.
You've hit the branding button there when that happens.
That's I've told the story before about the guy that does a show now called Life After Blindness, because originally he was going to call it, I think it was After the Darkness. And I said, go ask your friends, what do you think the podcast is about? And he said, it's going to be called After the Darkness. And somebody said, isn't that a band from the 80s? And somebody else thought it was a vampire thing and something else. And I asked him, I go, well, what's your show about? And he goes, well, it's about my life after I went blind. And I go, so life after blindness. And he goes, yeah. And I go, that's the name of your show. I said, go use that. Ask some people. Because he was like, yeah, that is pretty obvious. And I'm like, yeah. So it's
And just don't be afraid to rebrand. I think if you didn't get it right the first time, rebrand, go back after it. It's a little bit of work to unwind all that stuff, but it's not terrible. I still have some cleanup to do, but it eventually works. And it's just a podcast.
Yeah, about the time you think you got them all, you're like, oh, wait, no, I forgot about, podcasthack.com or whatever.
It's kind of like changing your passwords everywhere. You know, with Heartbleed this week, I've been changing passwords. Yeah. And about every day I find a new site that I'm like, oh, yeah, I better, you know, like Slick Deals or like, I was doing something this morning and one of those places Skimlinks, which I don't know if many of our podcasters are using Skimlinks, if you go to skimlinks.com. That's a site where they'll actually automatically read through your post and mark things that they think they can highlight to sell, and then you make a commission off those links. And it's just, if you don't want to bother with all the affiliate stuff and you just want it done automatically, Skimlinks works pretty well for that.
Or if you get banned from Amazon.
Exactly.
That's another way to do that.
Exactly. But Skimlinks, but that was another one. I'm like, oh, Skimlinks, I need to find. So using LastPass to manage all those.
Have you had any success with Skimlinks?
No.
I'm going to say I've tried them on a couple websites, and it's always I go in and I see where I'm getting clicks. But I think it's, to me, one great example would be if you were using a WordPress site and using something like SimplePress, which is a forum for WordPress. And so, hence, Skimlinks could work in the forums as well as your posts and pages. And if people are in there going, hey, I found this microphone or that or whatever, that would be an easy way to make affiliate links to all that fun-filled stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. The deals aren't as good. You don't make as much as if you have your own direct affiliate links, but it's super easy. Here's where I think Skimlinks work really, really well. One, if you're really good in your show notes, if you put a lot of text, because it's text-based. Mm-hmm. I'm kind of a link guy, a few little notes and some links go into my show notes, but if you have a lot of text inside your show notes or you're sending out a newsletter and you post that to your site as well, I think that's where Skimlinks works well. And two, if you have a forums that's active and you get a lot of traffic on the forums, you can actually assign Skimlinks to go through and put links on other people's posts in your forums, right? You have to own the forums to be able to do that, but that is automatic SEO and automatic link generation for you. And I do know a podcaster that's using it and using it fairly successfully. Mm. Because his forums gets hundreds of thousands of hits every single week, it's gold. So those are some areas I think where Skimlinks would work real well for you.
The thing about forums, and maybe you can chime in here, the thing I have found is I know a podcast that just launched, like they're on episode, I think, 6. And they put up a forums, and the bad news is it's social proof that nothing is going on over here. And I was like,
it's crickets.
So a forum, if you plan on doing one, you've got to prime the pump. You got to go in and say, hey, what do you want to talk about? Or here, what do you think about this or that? And
Mike Howard, who's hanging out in our chat, a good friend of mine. Mm-hmm. Actually, Mike was just on my show last Thursday. He did a great job too. Him and his friends from jpegdoraw.com. All about photography. We're on our show. The Mike has been going after starting a forums. This is his second start at forums. He did it once and didn't go as well as he was hoped. So he changed the software and updated some things and is making another run. And Mike will tell you, man, he is just killing it to get traffic started. So he's creating topics and then posting it to his Facebook group and so that they'll come over. And it takes – creating forums is just not open it and people will come. You have to work it. I think it's harder than podcasting, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I've tried it twice. I know Ray Ortega has tried it. And usually what happens is spam bots take over.
Yeah.
And
you need great moderators.
Yeah.
What you need.
Yeah. And I know I use SimplePress and I like it because I could set it up for the School of Podcasting where once you log in as a member of the School of Podcasting, you're already logged into the forum. So it's not a separate thing. And I love forums. The school of podcasting members are like, no, Facebook, let's use Facebook. So we did, you know, the majority rule.
That's where I went too, Dave. Yeah. I did for the average guy, .tv. I just said, I'm not going to mess with forums. I'm already busy enough.
Yeah.
I'm just going to drive my users to our Facebook group. And those work great, especially, I think, better for our community. I don't know if the guys that I've attracted really want to spend more time in another forum, right? They're already tech guys. Yeah, they're already in a handful of forums. So measure your audience, right? Ask them. You might have good luck. Hyper niche podcasts usually will have easier luck with forums because you might be the only one with that forum. So if you have a soup, this is where having a smaller audience that's a hyper niche may actually be in your benefit and not, you know, those people, that's the place they come to talk, and the hyper niche creates more engagement. So if you're in one of those, and I think you, Dave, you had a guy on last week talking about, as I was calling in after my run, I was listening on my phone to you on Spreaker. I was listening to Spreaker live as I was traveling and in the chat room while I was driving, which I probably shouldn't have been doing. But he's at Andy Griffith, right? He podcasts about the Andy Griffith show or no. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, is that right?
Yeah.
Super hyper niche.
He's in there. He's in the chat room.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Alan.
So that was Alan. And so that would be forums, I think, would be dynamite for that kind of audience because they are hyper engaged and it's just another place for them to, you know, to talk with each other. So Alan, drop a note in the chat there. Drop a note in the chat there if you're using forums, if you've had good experience with it.
Yeah. The thing with the Facebook group, that because people are already there. That's basically was the number one answer. We're already there. Because the first time I did my podcasting in 6 weeks class, I used an online forum company that was actually pretty cool. But everybody's like, oh, it's another login. It's another place to go. And it was just crickets. You know, yeah. They would go over and they would get the homework. But that was just trying to create a community over there.
He does have a forum. Yeah, cool. Alan does have a forum. Yeah, so good. It's yeah, very cool. It's a good way to engage. And Alan mentions in there that in the chat here that getting some groups from Facebook, they use a Ning network, which is a great way. I mean, it's a Facebook like, except it's private. And the Ning network is a great way to do it. But sometimes getting those users across platforms, it's next to impossible. With the Gallup podcast, with all the coaches, we've grown our group to almost 2,000 now. And I asked them, do you want to go on to Google Plus too? And they're like, I don't want to do another network. So what I'm finding though, I was speaking with them individually. I am in such a unique situation, Dave, because I get to talk to my listeners live, right? They come to Gallup from time to time and they've watched the show and I get to get live face-to-face feedback from them, which is just awesome, right? Yeah. Very often we don't get to meet our listeners and I do, which is a huge advantage. But there was a gal in one of the groups that said, hey, I want to go on Google. Have you started a Google Plus group yet? And I said, no, we haven't done that. Most of the Facebook people don't want to do that. Well, that's the point. They're on Facebook. It's like asking, you know, people who like chocolate ice cream if they like vanilla. Well, right. You know, hey, they like chocolate ice cream, right? That's kind of the deal there. So she's like, well, I'll just start one. And I'm like, great, go have at it, you know, go start another group. And I bet they'll attract some of our audience that makes their way to Google Plus.
Yeah, I had a new subscriber to the School of Podcasting. When you log in, there's a spot there for support. And he said hitting his own microphone. And this is why you don't talk with your hands, Dave, when you're a podcaster. But that's a nice ring to it.
I sit on mine just so I don't do that. Yeah.
She said, hey, just for the record, there are those people that she goes, I've avoided Facebook for years. And I was like, really? So, yeah.
Oh, don't avoid it. That's where everybody is.
Yeah, I was like, you do know it's the size of a small country. It's like, you might want to think about putting your toe in there.
Yeah. But 1.4 billion people now on Facebook. Here's something interesting though with Facebook. It's not in China. And so it's, they block Twitter, Facebook, and YouTube. So if you're hoping to, we have offices in China with Gallup, and our Chinese offices have been asking me, hey, what, you know, are we going to start a version for China? And I'm going to have to go through a whole education process to learn their social media platforms because I don't know. One, I don't speak Chinese. But two, I'm going to have to learn. Yeah, a little tiny one. We get through it. We actually on Friday night we were going to record a Korean podcast, and I had some folks, they speak Korean, and I would start the show and then just drop off, and they would take it from there. And then, you know, I would do like Mike Phillips does, where he just for his radio show, he's kind of behind the scenes during the show. He's kind of behind the scenes, just making sure the technology is working.
Speaking of technology, we're still dying to kick ours here. If you want to call in, we're using a new old call-in system today. It's 845-262-2401. Be the first to, you could say, I was the person that helped Dave test call-in studio via Magic Jack, via an iPhone app, via an iRig.
iRig.
Yes. So that number again, 845-262. I guess I should throw that in the chat.
How will we know so we're not going to hear the...
I have the little control panel gizmo.
You'll see it on the control panel, yeah. So I won't know.
But that's the kind of the cool thing.
Hey, we've got a caller.
Yeah, I can say, we've got a caller.
Hey, we've got a caller.
So, and you know what else I got today besides callers? Only the second time this has ever happened to me, and it's weird. It's like your birthday. Darren Dake, who was the co-host on Ask the Podcast Coach show, I saw him on Facebook, and he went to see a movie called God's Not Dead, and he was wearing a T-shirt that said God's Not Dead. I said, hey, I saw that movie. I thought it was awesome. I didn't know they were selling T-shirts. They didn't have them. And I go to my mailbox today, and they're in my mailbox from Darren Dake, guessing the right size as well, a God's Not Dead T-shirt.
Nice.
And I was like, that was so cool. I was like, I think once I got magnets from Australia, but I was like, wow, I was like
nice job,
completely blown away. Yeah. So Darren, thank you very much for that. And nobody's taking us up on the phone call.
Oh, that's okay. Hey, let me talk about Spreaker at 30,000 feet.
How's yes, that sound? Let's do that.
So this last week, you know, there was in one of the Google Plus groups, there was I think it was in the podcaster group on Google Plus. Mm-hmm. Too many social networks to remember here. Yeah. One of the questions was, why should I even consider using Spreaker? And you chimed in kind of saying, you know, I don't think it's a great place for your soul, for everything to live for your podcast, right. Blah, blah, blah. But on Thursday, I've been using Spreaker just to create an audio-only feed for my podcast. So I have two reasons why, if you do live podcasting, you might want to consider Spreaker. I'm going to take a page from Daniel J. Lewis on this. I got two reasons why you want to do that. One is that you may engage people where YouTube is blocked. So if you're a Google Hangouts, you know, if you're using Hangouts on Air like I do for the Gallup podcast, we kind of use that exclusively. That's where we expect people to come and to listen. Some folks can't, it's because it's physically blocked. And so you need to provide some kind of way for them to listen to the audio, because they will come and say, hey, I can't view this, you know, I can't view this. The second reason, while we're waiting for our caller that it's up, that's very good. But let me throw out the second one.
Right.
The second reason is that I had a listener on Thursday night to my show come in from 30,000 feet on Southwest Airlines Wi-Fi. I thought that was pretty cool. He was listening to us on the plane live, because a lot of those, a lot of the airlines Wi-Fi, they block YouTube, they block Skype, they block Google Hangouts, they block those social media that are bandwidth intensive. But Spreaker, because it's audio only and it's compressed audio on the way out,
right?
Need it through. So you might want to. We have folks in India that have terrible connection, right? They're still, but so they can't do Google or YouTube, and so Spreaker is another option. So if you're doing live podcasting, that might be another reason why you might want to consider broadcasting with Spreaker. And by the way, Spreaker will broadcast while you're recording on Audacity, while you're sending it out to Mixler, or while, you know, it works pretty well when it grabs that microphone. So just another reason to maybe consider Spreaker.
That's very, very cool. I never thought about that. All right, well, here we go. They've been on hold for a minute, so that's cool. We haven't dropped them.
Very nice.
All right. So ending at 8726, I click on talk, and you're now live with Dave and Jim.
Hi, Dave and Jim. This is Dustin Downhauer.
How are you?
Doing well, thank you.
You are our guinea pig, so I thank you very much. Jim, can you hear him okay?
Yeah, I can hear him great.
Awesome. So
that's great. Yeah, my question is in regards to show notes. Do you guys have any tips? Sometimes it seems like it takes a while to write them. What are some good tips that you guys have used that would help podcasters like myself try to not put too much detail, but put enough to where everybody that's listening, they also, that it can benefit them as well.
What is too much detail?
I guess pages. Like, I guess what's a good rule of thumb when writing show notes to make sure that you're giving enough information, I guess, and not too little. That's a better way to say it.
Yeah, I tried to shoot, and I forget what websites we were looking at. We looked at like Michael Hyatt. We looked at like some of the top bloggers out there to see how many words they put into a blog post. And I think the average was 700. So I shoot somewhere, and I read somewhere else that Google needs at least 300. And a lot of times, depending on your show, if it's a 5-minute show, how do you, you know, how do you do that? And, what I do, so I usually shoot for words, and I just kind of describe what's going on and make sure to always put links anytime I put a link into that. And I used to worry about that. I'm like, well, if I type too detailed a show notes, well, then maybe they won't listen. And I thought, well, some people like to read, some people like to listen, and some people like to watch. And I thought, well, you know, I'll just, if they want to read it instead of listen to it, if I'm still giving them value, I guess I don't really care. I will say this, the shows that I write, because what I'll do is I try to, when I'm not testing a million things, write my show notes in WordPress and save it as a draft. So when it comes time to actually record the show, those are my bullet points. So I don't have to then expand on that. And I found when I write the show notes first, my content is better as opposed to having bullet points and kind of winging it. But if I've kind of expanded it already, I really have to figure out what is the golden nugget out of this topic. Like right now for Monday's show, for the school podcast, I'm going to talk about the pros and cons of deadlines. And right now that's about as far as I've got. I've done some Google searching and I have some personal experience that I'm going to share, but I need to really figure out, okay, what does my audience need to know about this that's going to make them go, wow, I've never thought of it that way, or here's how I can fix things or things like that. So Jim, any insights on show notes?
Yeah, I totally agree with you in the sense that write as much as you can before the show. One of the advantages to having multiple, Darren, is it just you or do you have guests on there as well?
It's Dustin.
Sorry, Dustin.
No problem. We're actually, we have had a couple guests, but it's mainly my wife and I, and then we're going to start to incorporate more guests though to the platform.
Yeah. So one of the things that I do is I use a the Google Doc infrastructure, and I share those notes with the guest, and then I ask them to put their notes in advance. And so I kind of know what they're going to talk about. And then I just rip those off and use them for the genesis of my show notes. And so it really helps me get a lot of content without me having to create it all or to get it all done. And you get it right from the guest. And then the other thing is during the show, if they have live links, you know, if they're saying links as they're talking, I try to capture those and drop them in the show notes while we're live so that they're there. So I don't have to go back and listen to the whole thing, although I do, but it increases the chances of me getting those links into the show notes. So the share note idea is one that might help you capture those things in advance as well.
Yeah, we do that with Eric and I for the podcast review show. We type all of our notes of here's what I liked, here's what I didn't like, and then he puts make a clip from this minute to this minute. So we have all sorts of communication, and a lot of that can be used as a show notes later. So that's another tip. And we use Google Docs for that. The other thing that's cool about a Google Doc is if you are doing something live, you can use that as like a hidden chat room, because whatever you type in the Google Doc, the other person that you've shared it with will see that. And so Eric and I might actually use that as like a behind the scenes, hey, let's move on to this next. Let's go to that next.
Yeah, because it's live.
Yeah.
It's updating live for you. So it's a real benefit to be able to do it that way. Does that help, Dustin?
Yeah, it does. Could I ask one more question?
Oh, absolutely. Before you do that, I got to say, here's one cool thing, a little behind the scenes that's cool about having the phone in its own channel. I can take out a bunch of mids so it doesn't sound so much like a phone. So there you go. So you're sounding very cool. So continue on, Dustin. And be sure to tell us where we can find your stuff.
Okay, I will. It's at definingmomentstv.com. DefiningMomentsTV.com. That's where you can listen to the podcast. And it's the podcast is called Life Lessons. Now, my second question is, my wife and I, we record in the same room, and I've been able to reduce some of the bleeding noise that we've had. But I wondered, because most of our guests we've had actually at our house, and so I'm about to incorporate guests through Skype, where my wife and I are in the room, and then someone using Skype. Do we have to have earphones on during that Skype call? Does the person's voice coming through the computer bleed through? Because I have call recorders and I'm trying to test it out. I guess I'm trying to figure out microphone wise, how can that affect the sound quality and any possible issues? I guess I'm trying to figure out how to make sure my wife, my microphone, and the guy that's on the computer, they don't all bleed together. Yeah, does that make sense?
Yeah, one of the things, and you hit the nail on the head, generally if you're bringing in somebody via Skype, everybody has to wear headphones. Because what happens is if you have their voice coming through your speakers, that's going to get picked up by your microphone. And what happens then is they hear themselves back through your microphone into Skype and back to them. And so what happens is all of a sudden they start sounding like they're drunk because they and 'cause they're on a delay. Like if I did this right now, we could actually do this just to do this. Yeah, hear me.
So what happens is all of a sudden they
so there's me in the background.
Like they're drunk because they because they're on a delay.
So that doesn't.
Yeah, I hear the delay.
Yeah, so right. If you're trying to talk, one of the hardest songs to sing is the Star Spangled Banner in a stadium, because you start to sing "Oh say," and then about a second later you hear your voice come back at you, and so Jim, anything else you want to chime in on that?
Yeah, Dustin, one of the things I was going to say for your local studio, what you might want to consider is, and this is what I use in my live settings, is I get a headphone amplifier that has four different outputs. And so I take basically the sound coming back from the caller, the PC sound, my own voice sound, those kind of things. And I route those out through, different, I can have four different people hearing that channel. And that sometimes lessens the complication of getting everyone on headphones. And so the headphone amplifier has individual volume settings as well. And they're like $30. They're not terribly expensive. If you go to the averageguy.tv/gear, I've got my gear listed and you can see the one that I bought to make that work. It's not a terribly expensive one. But sometimes especially when I'm doing live settings, that really helps get everybody with headphones on. Now, sometimes when I do it live, I've done it where we don't have a caller, and so not everybody has to have headphones to make that work because we're not broadcasting any sound. But Dave is right. Anytime you've got any sound coming out of speakers, it's a bad thing. And now both Skype and some of these other services have noise canceling, and so you may get away with it sometimes. But it's my recommendation. Always do headphones.
Okay. All right, great. Well, that's all the questions I had. I wondered about the whole Skype thing. But yeah, thank you so much.
You bet. Dust, thanks for calling in.
Have a good one.
All right.
Have a great Easter.
Bye bye. Okay. That's a good, that's that hardware setup question. I'm always surprised. I've been doing it for so long. I'm always surprised at folks still trying to figure the complexities of that out,
Right.
To get that. One of the things, one of the things I've done, I've got an Alesis Multimix 8 that I use, and I don't have the buzz problem via USB, which a lot of people do, and I don't. And so I use the USB. I take advantage of the USB function, which really allows me to not have to monkey with a mix minus in my situation, because all the sound comes through the soundboard, including my own voice, and then I come out of the headphone jack into my headset. Now, I could come out of the headphone jack and plug that into a headphone amplifier, and I could multiply that here in the studio if I wanted to make that work. I could also come out for the recording. I could come out of there's some RCA jacks out that I could come in and plug that into a mixer or a handheld recorder. Mm-hmm. That would record everybody. And that's not how I do it, but it could be done that way. And so that lessens the complication of cables. I mean, I really have 1, 2, 3 cables coming out of my mixer, and I do these kinds of interviews with Skype and all those kinds of things all the time. So that makes that a little bit easier.
Yeah. And speaking of gear, you sent me a picture of where you were at, and you had like a laptop and a couple, like a preamp. What was going on with that?
No. So that's my live setup that I take with me on the road. When we did a conference on Tuesday and Thursday, Infotech 2014 here in Omaha. And by the way, if you like doing this podcasting thing and you like going to conferences, one of the things that you could do is ask the conference if you can partner with them on, and this is what I've done, can you partner with them and do a live stream for them for the whole conference, right? And so what we do is I go in for Infotech. AIM is the company, AIM is the company that runs these conferences, and they give us a booth. We set it up. We broadcast on behalf of them, and they give us we get to go to the conference for free. Now, I don't go to the sessions, but get to hang out. We do it for recruiting purposes for Gallup. So there's other motives there, but they give us the booth for free, and we partner with them, and they give us make sure you always have a landline with them. Don't use conference Wi-Fi because it's always horrible. But so the rig or how I set that up, and it's I don't take any callers, although I probably could if I wanted to, but I don't take callers. It's just keynotes and session speakers, and they come in, and for 20 minutes I interview them about what they talked about. Dave, it's super easy because they're already prepped, right? They've done a session, and so you can just question them, ask them questions about what they're doing. So I use a Logitech C920 as the camera, and actually this time I posted it on a tripod so it would be far enough back so that it got us both in the shot. One camera angle, I use Google Hangouts on air with one camera shot. You can do that. You don't have to have people. You can take advantage of the live infrastructure on Google Plus. You don't have to have other people in it. Then I have an Alesis Multimix 4 that has two XLR inputs, and that's sitting on the table, connected USB to one laptop that's connected to the Hangout. And then I take two ATR 2100s, plug them into those two XLR ports, put those on the tripods that came with the 2100s. I haven't bought any other equipment than what came out of that box. Put them on the table. The thing, what you look like was a preamp, is actually that was the headphone amplifier.
Okay.
On there, and it's got four different channels to be able to amplify. And we just do, and I start the live stream in the morning, and I record all morning, and then that goes to YouTube. I had as long as a 3-hour recording block.
That was going to be my question. Is there any kind of limit on that?
I don't think so.
Wow.
I don't know. I haven't pushed it that far. 3 hours worked. I did. You know, I started at 10. I cut it off at, it's actually 2:30. I cut it off at 12:30. Just left it. And then what I'll do is download those, drop them in, edit them, slice them up, and re-upload them to YouTube to make them individual. And I used to do that thing where I would try and start a new Hangout every time. And it just takes so long to start a brand new Hangout on air with all the steps that you have to do.
Yeah, they really need to streamline that a bit. The whole
they gave you a lot of good options. It's just one of those things where it's for what I'm doing there, I don't want to set up a brand new Hangout, because especially when I'm doing it live, I don't want to have to re-embed that player on my live page every single time either. I want to kind of cut the code one time, cut and paste. There's just too many steps. Dave, one of the lessons I learned, though, in live from last year is that it doesn't – lighting matters. And especially in these conferences, you think you have enough light. But if you're going to podcast with video, man, and these webcams, they are light hungry. And even though that C920, I think, is the best webcam for the money right now, $75 out on Amazon if you want to get it that way, or you will use one of Dave's affiliate links to pick it up at B&H or whatever. And but they're still light hungry. And so Cowboy Studios makes a light rig that's less than $100. You get two lights in there, plus a third stand, and you can buy the umbrella for another $8. So you could get three umbrella lights, 245-watt bulbs that run at 60 watts. You know, they're fluorescent stuff. In fact, that's what I'm using right now. Nobody else can see this but Dave, but if I shut my lights off, you can see the difference, right, it makes in lighting in the studio.
Well, the other thing is that you have that's cool is you did that with a button.
I did. I have a remote. Yeah. So I went down to Home Depot and I picked up a $15 remote switch. So that it's got one of those big, you know, it's got a big, and you plug it into the wall and then you plug the lights into that. And then I've got a little switch. So I don't have to reach over there and turn those on. That's kind of nice in the studio to be able to pull that off. So that part works well. So live, live podcasting is a lot of fun. You get this ambient sound behind you of people talking and things going on. And in the last interview of the day that I did, they were actually tearing down the piping as we were, you know, the curtains and the piping as we were talking. And so the podcast starts or the interview starts and we have black all around us. It ends and it's all gone. I mean, they literally tore it down as I was doing the interview. So you can see these guys, the staff guys pulling stuff down around us. We just kept talking and kept doing the interview.
Do you know if I haven't like zero experience just with helping people with USB mixers? Is there any mixer that allows you to via Skype, I guess? So if I have a scholar, I'm making up a new person.
Yeah. One being scalded while they're calling.
Yeah. A Skype person that I'm connected my mic into my mixer into Skype that in the mixer, they're going to show up as a second channel. Like, is there any way to separate a Skype caller? I know the software program, Hindenburg does that.
Yeah, Hindenburg, there's some programs that support it. I went through this with Ray Ortega online, and the Multimix 8, the cheap version that I have, does not allow that. But there's a version up that, you know, when you connect it via USB, will have the ability to send all the channels through. Now you've got to have Skype on a separate channel. That can't be on the PC. You have to represent it as a channel to the software some way. And that gets a little too complex for me. I like to keep it simple. I like to keep it easier. I mean, I'm the guy who set up a second PC just so I don't have to monkey with Mix Minus. So I have a dedicated I call it the broadcast server, but I have a dedicated PC that brings all the sound into one place so I can record it and I don't have to monkey with Mix Minus.
Yeah, Mike Phillips says the USB mixer from Alesis has been discontinued. I saw that on Ray's site as well. And we had another question about...
Say that again. What's been discontinued?
The Alesis had a USB mixer that allowed you to kind of...
Oh, yeah. So that's discontinued now? Okay.
It's funny because they brought it back and then discontinued it. So we're hoping.
No, and I have the $99 version that I really like. It's been a great little... I've had very little issues with it.
So yeah, Craig Whelan in the chat room says, how would you set up to record three speakers outside the studio? He says, I've got a Tascam DR100, but... Like Jim, it only has two XLRs. You got to have a mixer, I guess.
In the studio?
It's outside the studio. He's saying out and about, basically.
So if you have three, if I wanted to set up three, yeah. Now what I did is I just brought in three speakers. I brought in two. I had as many as three guests. I just brought them in on one mic because I have two XLRs. Yeah, if I took my Multimix 8 with me, I'd have four XLRs and I could run them all through and in. When you're coming in via USB on the mixer, the Google Hangout only recognizes it as one signal. So yeah. Me and everybody else, one signal. And so, but that works really well live. So I could absolutely, yeah, you could get as many people, you could get a whole panel if you wanted to. Your mixer would determine how many people you can get. And then I put everybody, I try to get everybody on headphones. But you don't have to do that because the sound isn't coming out of anywhere, right? And if you're close enough to each other, they're hearing your voice anyways.
Right.
So you don't have to have headphones. The experience in a live conference is a little bit better, especially if the room noise is loud. You know, it's better. That's why all these sports guys, you know, they have these headphones. They don't have it because it looks cool. They have it because they have to hear.
Right.
You know, and they can't hear when all that field noise is going on. So it's one of those things that you don't have to do in a live. The big challenge, and you guys, Dave, you guys experienced this at New Media Expo. There we go. I was going to try and use the acronym, and it wasn't as easy as just saying New Media Expo. Is if you try to broadcast that then live to the crowd.
Yeah, that's...
That gets ugly.
Well, now you're dealing with live sound and feedback and...
That's so hard.
Yeah.
That is. And I still haven't cracked the nut on that. I still do not know the right way to get that done. Maybe that's a Mike Phillips question.
Put the speakers in front of the, like, make sure your microphones are behind the speakers.
Make sure the
microphone
way behind the speakers as far as you can get them. Cause you just get the weirdest echo on that. I mean, if they're hearing, cause it's a delay, it's a sound delay, you know, sound only travels at 728 miles per hour. So there will be a delay, and if you can hear that live sound at all, you're gonna get you're going to get some feedback, or not feedback, but you will get a little bit of echo. It's hard. I think it's hard.
Yeah. The reason I brought that up is Zach Perkins had written in and said he owns Call Recorder on the Mac, which is really cool. It splits. If you have you and a guest, it'll split you left and right. He says, but what happens if you have three callers? Is there any way to split those into separate tracks? And I'm like, no, unless you had, no, not really is the answer to that. You're going to end up with your two callers on one channel and you on the other. So that's nothing quite.
When I do that stuff, Dave, I don't try to split stuff out. I know a lot of podcasters like to do that to mix individually. And I've given up on that idea for the most part. It's like, I got to try and get my live mix just as good as I can.
Yeah.
And then I just run with it.
That's it. I mean, when I'm sitting here, I'm looking at your audio level and I look at my audio level. And when we have a caller, I, you know, try to get them all in the same and that's close enough. Then I'll run it through Auphonic and, or, you know, Mixlr if I need, or not Mixlr, but, Levelator if I need to.
Alan says in chat that he thinks XSplit would work well for a single camera podcast to be able to add graphics, video, et cetera. Yes, I totally agree. That would be very true. I think XSplit would be great for something like that. Although if I was going to do live with XSplit, I would hire a producer to come in and run an XSplit piece. You don't want to be doing live, being the host, asking the questions and trying to handle all the camera angles. So I'd have a producer come in. And then Craig said, I'd like the blue, he tried a Blue Yeti to conference pick up and there was way too much echo and probably way too much noise. That Blue Yeti is going to pick up everything. I mean, it's going to pick up noise in Cleveland. So you want to make sure that the Blue Yeti is not designed for crowd. It's designed for a very, very quiet studio and good sound. And so, I wouldn't recommend that. These ATR 2100s, champs. And then I bought a buddy at the 2005, you know, the black version of these 2100s. We're going to actually test that. I shouldn't say test. It's going to be just fine. But I bought him one of those. His mic sucked, so I bought him a new one. And he'll be on the podcast with that 2005.
Yeah, that is basically, from what we've seen, the same guts of that microphone as the... And it's funny because somebody was listening to our old episode where you had said you would ship somebody an ATR 20. That was back when they were $37.
And
she's like, I think they're $80 now. And I'm like, really? Have they gone up that much? I haven't.
I did get the 2005 for $50. So I told Kyle, you know, we have a tech scholarship fund in our podcast, which means if people use our Amazon link, I take that money that I make off the Amazon commission and I just turn it into gifts that I buy for the viewers, the listeners. They need something in technology. They want to try something out. I buy it for them. I ship it to them. They write a review for the site. It's a great relationship, right? They get to keep it. I don't have to beg vendors for stuff. I mean, I hate that. I hate begging vendors. Can I have some equipment, please? You know, I just hated it. And then they make you send it back. Anyways, so I used the tech scholarship fund and I bought them that microphone. And I told them I was waiting for the price to come down. And I got it on Amazon for $49.99 the other day, free shipping on Prime. So that version has come down. But it's still $79 or whatever for the 2100s, which is just, it's still a deal.
You're right. Still a great microphone.
Listen, I carry, these microphones take a beating, Dave. We've shipped them all over the world. I've got microphones in Sydney, Australia. We've shipped them to New Zealand. I've got them, you know, I've got them all over the United States. I bet I bought 25 of these things and they're great microphones.
Here's an interesting question. Although I almost don't want to bring it up because it's that lovely stats thing that comes up every single week.
I do it.
Should we do it?
Yeah, do it.
All right. Ryan Beagley says, I'm a numbers guy. I know I'm putting too much into my numbers via Libsyn. Well, right there. That's step one, is admitting you have a problem. he says, I use that to weigh the success of our show. I'm having a blast doing it. That's good to hear. But I check the numbers religiously. And when they don't do better than we did the week before, I feel defeated. Anyone been there and worked through it or found a better way to use that energy? And that's to me, that's one of the things I'm trying to do because I actually did a post on the School of Podcasting that says, do you know who your podcast expert is? Because they're coming out of the woodwork. And in some cases, they are doing things that appear to be not true. And I went, ooh, and I when I listen to people like that, it actually makes me angry in some cases. And I'm like, oh, there's another, but here's somebody else who's going to make a bunch of messes that I get to clean up. And, but in some cases they have a bigger microphone than I do. So they're big internet marketers and such. And I just told myself, I got to quit reading this kind of stuff. I got to quit, mm-hmm. you know, I have a bunch of Google alerts and things like that, but I was just like, this is not going to help me make better content for my audience. It just makes me cranky.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I'm with you. You and I are in the same boat on that. I get cranky in that scenario too. How do you use that energy differently? Okay, so I think there's a couple ways if you're a stats junkie, and I think we all are when we get started because we want to see improvement. You know, we like to see that go. And my stats haven't moved in a while, and yeah, it's frustrating, but get past it, right? One of the things you can do is and you talk about this all the time, survey your audience. Mm-hmm. So if you're stuck, if it's not moving, if it's plateaued or even moving backwards, well, okay, now would be a good time to survey your audience. So reach out there and find out what you're doing and see what they like and what they don't like and get some feedback from them. Two, then focus that energy on platforms that will help you grow your audience. And so continue to reach out into various areas. You know, just get involved in some forums that are around the same niche that you're in. Start helping people. You know, what I find, Dave, is when you're helping people, you don't have a lot of time to feel sorry for yourself. So get out there, help people do stuff. Get them doing things that are in your niche. Find great ways to help them out. So those are a couple of good ways of some things you can do to kind of rechannel that energy. And then quit checking your stats. I check mine maybe once a month.
Yeah, it's when I saw that come in, I was like, yeah, because there's a cool thing in Libsyn where you can go in and say, show me like the last 3 months. And at first I thought they were kind of flat. And then I saw that, no, they were going up like in a 3 months time. It looks like I'm up about 200 downloads roughly, you know, like it's a slow slant, but it's going up. But when I if you expand it back out, it just goes all over the place. Basically, it's kind of up, but there are times when it looks really, really flat, and they have a thing that shows you now your average. And that's when I was like, oh, you know what? I could just feel I'm getting sucked into this, and I'm starting to, you know, and then I was like, well, maybe I should see what the titles were for this. So I did look for anything that really jumped out. And that's the cool thing is in Libsyn, you can put your mouse over that dot and it will give you the day. And a lot of times that will help you pinpoint, okay, that's probably that episode or things of that nature. But I did. I started. I'm like, wait, I'm getting way too pulled into stats.
Yeah.
And
Kathy says she checks hers once a week. I think that's a good, yeah. I mean, whatever works best for you. With the Gallup podcast that we do, sometimes like we really track our live numbers. That's kind of what I track. And sometimes we've had as many as 500 live, and sometimes we've had as many as 75 live, right? It's this fluctuating. It kind of depends on the marketing that we've done in advance of it. You know, last week, 2 weeks ago when I was on, we never got to this question. I had mentioned we sent out 2.2 million emails inviting people to come listen to our show, right? And somebody said, how do you get 2.2 million? Okay, this is the beauty of podcasting in the enterprise, right? These are our customers that come in and have purchased from us in the last 3 years. And so we have that customer list, right? That's the advantage of, and that's a very unrealistic, if you heard me say that, this is a very unrealistic idea for the average podcaster because you don't have access to those numbers. But, you know, when we did the 2.2 million mailing, I got about 600 live. Now, that if you do the percentages on that, Dave, it's not very good.
Yeah, I'm going to say.
You know, you're like, that's a lot. It's still a lot live, but it's not a lot. It's not a huge turnaround on that. But, you know, so that's peak. And then typically we invite 100,000 or so, somewhere between 75 and 100,000 each every 2 weeks get invited to come out and listen to the program. And I get a bunch of Facebook, you know, we get more. But I try not to worry about if it's 75 or it's 500 or whatever. Try to focus on delivering that quality content week in and week out. The advantage is you're creating content that's going to go somewhere, like either on your MP3 is going to go to your server, or it's going to go on YouTube. That stuff will get viewed again and again and again and again. And don't forget, you've got old stuff out there that might be some great material that you could be continuing to use. So pull your best stuff out of your old stuff. Put it together in a promo. And start blasting that stuff around. Start figuring out ways to get that promo out so people can hear your best stuff.
Yeah, that's it. That's one of the things I've been thinking about is is there are really two things you should be focusing on. One is making the best content you can, but then you do have to find a way to get it out there and promote it and things like that.
Yeah, yeah, it's just the old traditional model, man. You got to beat the street. That's the, you got to figure out, you got to figure out ways to, I mean, I had Robert Scoble on my podcast.
Sweet.
And I thought, oh, this is going to be awesome. I know Robert doesn't listen to this, but it didn't do anything. The needle did not move, right? You don't know. Mike Howard's had some guests that some of them draw a bunch, some of them don't. You know, you're not every guest. You talk about this on School Podcasting a lot, you know, getting guests and then having them promote. And
yeah,
that's a way of doing it, right? Not every guest knows what they're doing. And even if you help them out, they don't know. So some guests are, some guests aren't. Not everything's going to hit. Even if you got a big name guest, it doesn't necessarily mean that it's going to translate into numbers. And so you just got to keep doing it and doing it because you love to do it, right? That's kind of the reason most of us, although I think you can do this just for money. I'm just going to say this. I think you can do this just for money. I'm going to throw that in the middle of the room.
Are you?
Throw that grenade in there.
Let's start that podcast just for money. No, there's a I've got to find it. I heard an episode. I think it was called the – I think I threw it in the chat at the very beginning. It's Antipreneur, I think was the it was called The Worst Sales Pitch for Podcasting was the blog post.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Here, I'll throw this in the chat. And this guy came on, and again, this was something that for me kind of made me angry because he was saying, if you're not going to make money with your podcast, well, you shouldn't even start one. And I was like, well, hold on, hold the fence there. And then I'm not sure who, his name was John, and he was recommending that you use a condenser microphone. And I was like, wow, okay, there's two things I really disagree with. And he was just coming across as this big podcasting guru, which doesn't mean he's not, but he was somebody I disagreed with. But he was saying, yeah, Alan brought this up last week. Are we hitting it too much about making money with your podcast? You know, what if you just want to find other like-minded people? What if you want to, you know, find other people that like chocolate-covered fish sticks in your area or whatever it is that you're into? And I was like, you know, I think he's got a point because there is a lot of focus on that about monetizing and niching down and building that relationship. And in some cases, people just want to meet friends. I know Michael Butler does the Rock and Roll Geek Show. And when he was employed, he didn't care if he made any money with his podcast. Now, he has since he worked for Mevio.
Oh.
Yeah. And So he's.
Yeah, well, Dave, I think it matters how you come at this, right? So if your intentions are to make money, and I think you can make money podcasting. People are doing it. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I think lately we've demonized it a little bit, like, oh, you know, making money for podcasting is of the devil and you're evil if you're trying to. No, I don't think we're saying that, right? I think it's you can absolutely make money podcasting. And if that's your goal, you've got to work it like any other job, right? You've got to advertise it. You got to attract listeners. You got to find a way to monetize it. You've got to. And I think you can do it because people have. Dumas has done it. Laporte's done it. You know, Adam Carolla has done it. I mean, you could start rattling off folks that have done it. It can be done. However, I think most of us, and that may be even too strong of a word, some of us, let's say, go into this for just the pure joy of communicating with each other and having a conversation and creating great content that we hope to share with people. If that's our reason to do it, then no, you don't have to make money doing it. And if you can, it's great. But, you know, so check that reason why. I am a little hesitant when we say you can't make money podcasting. And I'm even hesitant when people said that shouldn't be your first reason. I can't agree with that. I think it can be your first reason. But if it is, it's a job, right? It's not a hobby. It's a job. You better treat it like a job. And I think you can do it. And you know what? I bet there's some great podcasters out there who can do it for a job and still make great content. Right. I think they can do that. I think it can be done. So that's my opinion. I just feel like we've said before, you shouldn't, a blanket statement. I hate blanket statements, but a blanket statement, you should never start podcasting to make money. No, I think you can. As long as that, you know, you're going to work your butt off.
That's the key. Yeah. I think people think that, I'll read my blog. I'll put it up. I'll get into iTunes and then I'll quit my day job. Well, that's what Mevio said back in 2004. And yeah, it didn't work. Now, they were actually paying people to podcast, which was great. I was one of them at the time. And, you know, if you're not bringing in revenue, if you don't have the right sponsors, and really they were almost ahead of their time because they were back then in 2005, they're trying to sell sponsorship on a podcast and they had to, you know, spend half the business meeting explaining to people what the heck a podcast was. So now you have things like the Midroll and Podcast One and all these other companies. And I'm like, they might've been a little before their time.
Yeah.
And, yeah, I just hate to hear when the guy says, yeah, I just lost my job. I'm going to try podcasting as a career. I'm like, ooh, that's.
Well, I think it's a good idea. Just realize it's like any other job, right? Yeah. You're going to, and not only that, but you're up against, you're in a very unproven market, right? I mean, we're still in the early stages of people knowing what podcasts are and being able to get those out and those kinds of things. So just realize, I mean, it's going to be like, it's just like going out and selling cars or just like getting a job at Chipotle.
Right.
Nice job on the last week on Chipotle, by the way.
Thank you.
At the end, it's still just a job, right? And so you've got to approach it like that. And I think some of your advice is good for that, and that you can't just start a podcast and people come listen. You know, you got to beat the street to get it done. So I think that's, that's all I got to say about that.
Well, Kathy Kelly from specialmouse.com asked in the chat, Dave, how many people are listening to schoolofpodcasting.fm, which is a streaming radio station I have that, and I'm looking at my stats as we speak. Over the last 30 days, let's see, the average listening length was 13 minutes. My peak period, I had 62 listeners. Let me see if I can go into more of this. I think that's about it in terms of stats. Yeah.
She's asking live.
This was, oh, I don't know. She said, where's that's the only thing I hate about the stat, the chat room. You know, people keep chatting, which is great. I love the feedback. Where did she go? How many listeners do you think are tuning into an internet radio station that are at one time? Okay. I guess it depends on the station. Oh, I see. And then Mike said it depends on the station. I know the majority of people that listen to this show are doing it, you know, after the fact.
After the fact. Yeah. And that's too, even some of my tech podcasts on Thursday nights, that I get very few live listens, maybe 20. By the way, a mark of success, if your motivation is to make money, a mark of success is not how many people listen, it's how many people you convert.
That's it.
Right? It's money made. So, I mean, we can talk about, and Mike Phillips is talking about the number, you know, he gets a bunch of live, 4,000 is what he says, a bunch of live listeners. That's not really attract. Those are still, and I mentioned 500. Those aren't big enough numbers to attract really the national advertisers at this point for the big money. I mean, you got to have a lot more than that to get it done. And so for us niche podcasters or whatever in the smaller markets, your mark of success, if you're making money, if you're doing your podcast to make money, is how much money did you make, right?
Yeah.
How many listeners you got? Because you can have a gazillion listeners if none of them are converting to what you're selling or to whatever, right? It doesn't matter.
It's about influence. In my book, yeah. More Podcast Money, which you can find at Amazon as a Kindle book, I talk about the example Jason Van Orden and Jeremy, I always forget his last name, from Internet Business Mastery. There's this guy named Jeff Walker that does the product launch formula, and he only does it every few years. And when they do, every internet marketer with you know, everybody comes out to promote this thing. And Jason was the number one affiliate, and the number two had an email list 17 times bigger than Jason's, because Jason had a podcast. He had that connection. He had that relationship.
Yeah, yeah.
And knocked it out of the park. And so, yeah, it's not about the number of downloads. It's, you know, do you have any followers, I guess, is a way of putting
it.
Yeah, that.
Engagement, right? Yeah. Is that measurement of engagement in what you're getting. And so it's you got to be a way to measure that as well. So another reason not to just always watch your stats, because that's just one measurement. The second one I think is important is what kind of engagement are you getting from your community? And if you're selling something or if you're promoting a product, we have seen on the Gallup podcast since we started it, we have doubled our sales in a particular thing that we do there since we started doing the live podcasts. And so it's had an influence on on conversion rates. And to me, that's a success. And we have a long way to go. I mean, I think I have an audience of a billion that I can reach eventually, but we have a long way to go. But it's still, that's for us, were we, you know, we also use tracked links. And I know we're getting ready to wrap this thing up, but something as a podcaster you might consider when you're measuring the metrics of the effectiveness of how your podcast is, you might want to look into and create a way to do tracked links. And I think you could do this fairly easily through a Pretty Link. That's one way to do it. Yeah, you could get it done that way. But Google has some tools as well through Google Analytics that you can create tracked links. Drop those tracked links in various areas that you are putting your podcast out. So if you put it on Audioboo, put a tracked link for Audioboo only on Audioboo. Do that for all the various platforms that you're at. Then measure the effectiveness of the click-through and see where you're doing best in those various platforms. And that can give you some ideas of where you can concentrate your marketing dollars or whatever you're doing, your time. It doesn't always have to be in dollars. It can be in time. And you can measure the effectiveness of that and then spend more of that time on those particular properties. Now, Dave, you might, I know you've got great response on Spreaker, right? You got a lot of followers out there. That doesn't always mean they're always coming over to listen. So now, measure that.
I have, I think last week we had 7 people.
Yeah. And you have 3,000 followers over there.
Yeah.
Right.
So
which you'd think, geez, now obviously the 3,000 that you have that are not awake on Saturday mornings at 9:30.
Yeah, that's it.
Or 10:30 Central or 10:30 Eastern.
There. So, hey, we're gonna wrap things up and do appreciate everybody coming out to out in the chat room. And again, we're here every Saturday, schoolofpodcasting.com/live or ask the podcast coach. You can see a link right there on the website. And Jim, we can find you over at
theaverageguy.tv.
Awesome. And if you're looking, I'm doing a live class on May 3rd. It's planning your podcast. You can find that over at howtopodcast.com. And of course, if you're looking for everything you need to launch a podcast, you can go over to schoolofpodcasting.com and sign up today. Use the coupon code LISTENER and save a little bit off your first month. So thanks again, as always. Thanks to Dustin for helping us kick the tires. He made it 6 minutes. It's like a rodeo without dropping the call. So maybe we'll keep using that. But I think next week we're going to do a Google Hangout on air live.
I'll have to shower before we come on the show. I have to comb my hair.
We'll see you.